Hello, welcome to Channel 9 Live. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are watching from. My name is Tim Heuer. I'm your host today for another edition of the Windows Developer Community Standup. Joined here today with Kevin Gallo, Director of the Windows Dev Platform, and Tara Raj, who we'll be introducing and talking about later. So very excited to have you here again, Kevin. Thanks for joining us in the studio. Let's talk about some news. What's going on in Windows world these days?
Well, obviously there's been some discussion of a reorg that's going on. You know, and this is something that, you know, is something we've been planning for, this transition for Terry as he looks for, you know, basically the next chapter in his career and what he does afterwards. And this is something we've been looking for. Terry's helped us shape the org. And, you know, the nice thing is it really is about connecting Windows to Microsoft 365 and to Azure in a way that we haven't done before. And really is a very, very bright future for us in Windows as we bring this together as a holistic look for the company.
Yeah, I'm really excited when I hear about opportunities for client to cloud to AI and things like that. You know, having that a really great end-to-end story for developers, I think is going to be fantastic. So I think, you know, I keep getting my insider flight updates and everything. We've got some other things coming up soon, right, for the updates to Windows and things like that.
Yeah, a couple things. One, you know, obviously you can go to the insider builds. Our SDK is available for developers to start working with. It's been feature complete for a while. And, you know, very imminently and very soon, we'll have the next update to Windows coming out in general availability for all users. But developers obviously can get started right away. And then coming up in May, we're going to be talking a whole lot more about the Windows future, the things that are coming. So Joe and I will be presenting that at Build, which is May 7th through 9th. And just look forward to a lot of great new news that we'll be able to share with all of our developers.
Yes, we're very excited about Build. Make sure, if you haven't registered, register now for Build. We'll have a great online experience as well for people to attend virtually around the world. So excited for a lot of the things that are going to come out at Build. So we're here today. What are we going to talk about today?
Well, today we're going to talk about, really focus on web developers and back-end developers. And so we have a few things in Windows that we've been working on. First one is really our Windows subsystem for Linux. So we'll talk about some advancements we've made there. The second thing we'll talk about are just some of the native command line tool improvements. And obviously, a lot of developers are using virtualization. So as Windows has improvements to Hyper-V, we want to make sure developers see the full tool set that they can, you know, build experiences from their back end and web service. We talked a lot about the front end before.
That's right.
So now we've got to talk about how to build those back ends. To do that, I have brought Tara Raj here to come talk, who's a PM who works on this technology.
Yeah, thanks for having me. And so basically, we're going to talk about the Windows subsystem for Linux and Hyper-V today. And the thing that's great about this is we've been getting large amounts of feedback from the community, mostly from Twitter, as well as through conferences that we go to. So we'll actually be at React Europe coming up this next upcoming month, Build, as Tim mentioned. And it's great to hear what developers have to say about these features, and we really take this community feedback and use it as a way in which we come up with new features. And so I'm excited to talk about these today and the background of how WSL came to be, as well as where we're taking things in the future and new feature sets.
So you mentioned WSL, that's what the cool kids call it. So Windows Subsystem for Linux, WSL. This is what we used to call Bash on Windows, is that right?
Yeah, that's okay. Correct. So a little bit of background. WSL is basically a way in which you can run a native Linux binaries on Windows. And that's without the overhead of a VM through a command line experience. Of course, for the VM experience, we have Hyper-V, which we'll also talk about today. And so to address the background of Bash on Windows, essentially, it was originally called this when we launched because you could run a true Linux shell. And that was a true Linux Bash shell. But since then, we've had a bunch of other distros join the party, and now you can run shells that are not just Bash. And so we thought from a long-term perspective that that wasn't the best name, and so that's now why we call the technology the Windows Subsystem for Linux, or WSL for short.
And so you mentioned distros. So for those who aren't as hip as the three of us here, of course, like what is a distro and how does that play into this story here?
Yeah, so basically the Linux distros are flavors of Linux. You can think about them as a Linux base where you put special things on top. And so we have various organizations and companies that have built their own versions of Linux. And I'm happy to say that we actually have five of them at the store at this point. So if you go into the Microsoft Store, you can actually search for Linux and you're shown five distros. And these are what we currently have in the store. There are plans to bring more into the store in the future.
And so I can use I can go to the store right now, launch the store app, go to the store, pick one of these. If I want Ubuntu, I can install Ubuntu and have this WSL experience. So I have good choices, five choices that you mentioned that are in the store, or I can also, how does a different distro get in there? Is that something that I can do and put in?
Yeah, so basically, if you're a distro owner or maintainer, you're able to submit to the store.
Okay.
If you do want a special version for yourself, like a custom distro that you add in various tools and build on your own, you can do that as well. So on top of these distros you see in the store, we actually have recently open sourced a tool that helps you build these applications. So essentially, these applications run on top of WSL. And so what the application itself is a user mode binary, which is packaged up similar into a container. And then that container is put into a lightweight application. The tool that I'm talking about basically takes that application and unpacks it for you. So it extracts those binaries and launches them. And we call that the distro launcher. And so that's what we have now available in GitHub as a public project.
It's in GitHub, so is it open source as well?
It's completely open source, MIT licensed. So
awesome, that's great.
We have people coming in, creating their own distros, contributing to the launcher as well, and adding in various features. And it's been a great community point for us.
That's fantastic. So we'll make sure to put the link to that in the show notes for this episode. So let's see some demos of this WSL stuff. What do you think?
It's awesome, Madison.
Yeah, absolutely. So today what I want to demo to you is a scenario where we have Visual Studio Code, one of our favorite code editors. And what we're going to do with this is launch a very simple Hello World Node application. So the first thing I'm going to show you is that we can actually launch this application from WSL. So here I have Ubuntu.
Now, let me pause you right here.
Yeah.
So what we're looking at right here on your screen, this is you have already, from the store, got the Ubuntu distro, and this is the launch experience right here.
Yeah, okay. So I got Ubuntu from the store, and I enabled the optional Windows feature for WSL.
Okay.
And now I have launched Ubuntu.
Great.
So I have my Hello World application in my C drive. It's called My App. And what I can do from here is actually launch VS Code, which is on my Windows system directly.
Now you just said C drive. I don't see C colon there anywhere. So
yep. So
help us understand what
basically
we just saw.
The way that WSL kind of sees this is as if your C drive was mounted on your Linux file system.
Got it.
And that's where that MNTC comes from.
Great.
So here I've launched my application. You can see it's pretty simple, Hello World. And I have this process platform piece so that when I go and launch this in the browser, I can then show you which version of Linux that I'm running, or which version of Node. And so the first thing I'm going to do is launch the Windows version. So here I'm essentially targeting the Windows version of Node. So I'm just going to comment this out. I had a previous version up. So let's launch this again. And now I'm targeting the Windows version of Node. So that's why you see the Node executable here. So let's go into our browser and listen on port 3000. And so this is how you can see running the Windows version of Node. But I actually want to now take this application and run it in a Linux VM on Azure. So how you can do this in your Windows system is actually target WSL. And so that way, I'd be targeting the Linux version of Node instead of the Windows version. So to do that, let me go back to this launch file. And that's what we use in the debugger. So I have this statement here that's use WSL true. So I'm essentially telling the debugger to use WSL as my target environment. So now if I go back into my application and debug, you can see that I now have a bash executable. And so that's targeting WSL as our environment. So now when we go back into our application and refresh, you'll see that I'm now targeting the Linux version of Node So here I've essentially taken my test environment and emulated what I'm doing in production. And that's running that in the Linux VM.
And Kevin, this is what you were talking about really making Windows a great dev environment for web developers, right? So now I'm on my Windows box using the tools that I enjoy using, in this case VS Code as my editor, and still being able to target where I'm going to deploy.
Our goal is to make sure that regardless of what you're developing for, what you're targeting, sometimes people think, oh, you're about building Windows apps or Windows backends. No, it's about building any backend that you choose. And you can go use Linux or not. Windows is the right place to go bring all that development together with Visual Studio, full Visual Studio, Visual Studio Code, whether you're targeting Linux or Windows. We really want to make sure that we have a one dev box you can go use to build for everything.
That's great. That's awesome.
Yeah, so now I'm going to show you some other goodness that we have here. And these are integrations that we've recently added into Windows. So now that I have my Node server running, let's curl that. And notice that I have a command prompt.
We're not in the WSL
instance.
We're not in
WSL.
We're not in Bash. This is CMDXE that we just launched here.
Okay. And I haven't done anything special here. This is the Invox version of CMD. And we'll curl that server.
Nice.
And so here you can see Invox. We have this tool recently added. And we're planning on adding other Invox tools. So right now we have curl, we have tar, we have OpenSSH. And this is really where we're looking to the community to come in and tell us what you want next and what you'd like to see Invox. And we've been making some great strides here, getting awesome feedback.
That's cool.
It's exciting
to see.
So as a developer now, again, getting back to whatever tools of choice, making Windows a great dev box for all my needs and everything, now we have three. You know, in addition to all the great tools that Windows already has, you know, three additional tools that, and possibly more, right? So you're looking for feedback from the community.
We're going to keep growing and making it better and better. And we absolutely want to do that together.
That's great. That's fantastic.
Yeah. And so the last thing I wanted to show you here with WSL is the integrated terminal. So you can see here I have this Bash terminal here. And you can actually set your default integrated terminal that now includes Bash. So basically, I go into my command palette, and I select terminal default shell. And here we have various options. By default, you have PowerShell. But here I've added WSL Bash. And you can see this option pop up if you have WSL already installed. And so now I can use that as my default terminal. I don't need to flip back and forth between applications. I can go in here and run my Node server, and there we go. We're still listening here on port 3000. Refresh my web page.
And still in the WSL instance.
Still up and going, yeah.
Nice.
That's great. So I hear we also have improvements Hyper-V for VMs, right? So devs work a lot with virtual machines, and Hyper-V is a great solution to do those things.
Absolutely.
Tell us what's coming in that regard.
Cool. Yeah, that's correct. So we have a couple new things that we'd like to show today. The first of which is our quick create gallery. So here I have up Hyper-V, and I'm going into the quick create gallery. The first thing you see here is we have a Windows 10 dev environment option. What this is basically a template. It's a Windows 10 dev template that you can launch as a VM. Now notice here there's a local installation source. I'm going to go and step us through this experience, where basically I can take a local VHD that I have and spin up a VM from that. And this is actually adding my own custom template. So for me, I have a Linux VM in the flavor of Ubuntu that I can spin up. Now you saw that there was just one option there. Of course, as usual, we have plans to add multiple options. So this would include another flavor of Ubuntu, SUSE, any sort of Linux VM, regular VM. We plan to add these into that VM gallery. And it's really a way in which teams can work together and have a template for everyone on the team. Or you personally can create and destroy VMs as you need to and go and add them quickly. So you see that I didn't have to go through your typical Hyper-V step through of the wizard. It's just creating my disk fairly quickly. I have a fairly large VHD that I'm spinning up, so it takes a little bit more time.
Anybody who's ever done this before and done it manually by hand, realize having a gallery where we can actually share that, whether that's sharing it externally or inside your company or inside your developer work group, that's just a great asset.
Right. I think consistency is key, right? And it's like, oh, the developer's like, well, I configured it this way. And like, well, that's the wrong way. I did this one. And you have this patch installed and everything. So I like, you know, what you said, just having like a gallery of, you know, for any, maybe even per project
ones.
Even, right? So that matches your deployment.
Great.
Yeah.
Yes. I've done it 100 times, and this is, I'm excited by this feature. My own usage.
Absolutely. So the first thing that I'm going to show you here is our before experience. This is the old version of our RDP and state of VMs.
So what we're looking at here is, it looks like Ubuntu running in a VM environment, right?
Yeah, okay. Exactly. And this is an old version of it. So you can already see there's some issues with my mouse here. I'm going to sign in and show you what this before experience is like, because when you see the difference between the two, that's really going to show you how far we've come in the past few months. So there's a little bit of jumpiness and jitteriness with the mouse. The thing that's really annoying is you go here, and all of a sudden, now I have two mice. Come back in. It's a little bit jittery. If I go into my files, we have some options here, but there isn't really anything that says I have my Windows file system except for these shared drives, which is empty. Correct. So you'd have to go and configure, maybe even mount a drive. It gets to be quite a process. There's also no options if I wanted to drag and drop a file, for example. So this is on my Windows file system. I have a Hello World file. Can't really do anything there. So now I'm going to show you what we currently have, which is our new experience. And this takes advantage of XRDP. It's basically an extended session that we have. So here we have the new version. Already noticed the difference, right?
Yeah.
That rendering is a little bit better. We have something here, a shared drives option. If I open that up, you now see my C drive is there.
Nice. And that's your mounted drive. Again,
that's my mounted drive. And it's pretty easy to set up. When you go and you set up your VM, all you do is just click a checkbox that says, I want my Windows drives in here. And I have everything here up and running, my users folders right there ready to go. And so on top of that, I mentioned in the previous version that jittery mouse. Here, one smooth mouse movement.
Nice.
That's pretty awesome. So you can just go back and forth. Like, you know exactly what you're working with, what your system is. We also have clipboard. So this is pretty neat. I pulled up a text editor, and here I have a little bit of text in Notepad. All I have to do is copy, paste.
Nice.
And there we are. Now on top of that, I can also copy and paste files. So here, that same text file, just copy that, go right in, and paste it on our desktop. So it's really easy to have that experience between your VM and your client desktop now. And we're working on adding more improvements to this. You'll see things with rendering and windowing in the future, but we've come a long way for desktop developers on Hyper-V, and I'm really excited to see the future of it.
Awesome.
Yeah, a lot of fantastic improvements. The things that you just showed as far as those integration, we were looking at Ubuntu there, but are those improvements, they yield to other Linux implementations as well? It's more the Hyper-V story than anything else.
Yep,
then, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's for Linux VMs.
Great, that's fantastic.
General.
Well, I think now it's my favorite part of the show, where we get to hear from the community. So if you're watching, submit your questions right below the stream here, and we're looking to answer them. You ready to answer some questions?
Absolutely.
All right.
Yeah, let's do it.
Juice, one of my favorite people. How do you expect PWAs to influence the Windows app landscape? What's a PWA?
So PWA is a progressive web app. We used to call them hosted web apps. We introduced that a few years back. Now it's kind of standardized. Google supports them. We support them. And what basically it is a streamlined way of getting a web application deployed to your system. We allow them to come through the store. They deploy through Chrome. And it's something that we've kind of all worked together to say, hey, if I just want my website to be easily wrapped and deployed and run like an app, node address bar, and get some extra features like using some background services and things like that, it's an easy way to deploy that and package it up with a simple manifest that you just put on your website. So we support it fully. We do that by just basically, you can easily just submit your URL to the store, and you tell us, hey, here's where it's at, and here's where the manifest is, and we look at just like an application. You wouldn't even know. So most end users would just say, oh, it's an application that's running, and it happens to be backed by a website. Now, this is not that different than what developers have done in the past, where they have either wrapped it with a native wrapper that points to, with a web view, but it streamlines if mostly what you're doing is your website and you just want to do some light up. We have one extra thing above what traditional PWAs have done with others is we allow you in the store to request additional features from Windows. So all APIs on Windows, all WinRT APIs, are fully available to JavaScript. And so you can start using them. All you have to do is put an if Windows, and when you're running inside of a PWA, it can go light that up. So we think it's just another great way for web developers to reach their customers in a more streamlined developer workflow, where they can continue to do their work on the back end and project JavaScript forward. And they can also take advantage of features on Windows without having to go write even native code, C++ or C#. They can just stay in JavaScript, which is comfortable for them.
And so the PWAs in that and that light up scenario that you're talking about allow their web apps basically to have more of a native integrated experience with Windows when they target.
Just as if you are a native wrapper with a web view inside and you can access all of Windows, you can from the PWA, mainly because our store grants you that. You have to request it. In the end, imagine you want location or access to the contact list. You, as a website, you don't get that access because there's a security sandbox. When it comes to the store, we can go and grant those privileges to your app, and now you get access to the full Windows platform.
And do you think that, are we seeing more PWAs in the
store? We're seeing them grow. Okay. I mean, I definitely think there's a growing pattern. Like I said, it's another option. It's not like web developers had no path in.
Right.
But it is just a streamlined path. So if you have a pure web application and you want some light up, it's a very good path to get started. And we just want to make it easier. So I don't say it's a revolutionary pattern, but it is definitely a better workflow for web developers. It's something they haven't had in the past. And we're excited that we kind of introduced several years back, and everybody seems to have rallied behind it and created a standard for it.
Definitely seen the term come up more and more often these days. Great. Okay, Robert is asking, oh man, that command line. Robert is saying the command line looks old and dated. Are we doing anything to make that refresh? Look at some, everyone loves their command lines.
You mean like a fluent command line here?
Yeah,
you know?
Fluent. Are we going to see like transparent everything and the glow and all of these things?
When I use my command line, I'm not looking for all the flair, but I do understand that people want more flexibility, more control over font sizes and font control, so it looks cleaner and crisper. And so we have looked at that for allowing things like color, for tabbing of them. So there are some features we are looking at to make that experience better. I don't think fluent transparency and acrylic is probably the right thing.
Yeah.
But hey, if they want us to look at it, we can give acrylic backgrounds to command line.
All right, you heard it here first. Kevin's bringing back the marquee tag in the command line. I heard him say it.
We'll hold him to it. The short answer is yes, we are improving the command line, and you'll see more improvements in the near future. Some things that we recently came out with were 24-bit color, more VT sequence support, as well as screen reader. So you'll see that continue to improve. There are some internals that we need to go and modularize before all of that can happen.
And the best way where we start seeing those as a developer, as I want to follow the progress, is to get on one of the Dev Insider flights, right?
Absolutely.
And so as those features come out, we'll make sure that we kind of draw some attention to them, and they'll start showing up in fast and then eventually slow flights and stuff like that.
Yeah,
it's great. All right. Stacy is asking, hey, there's a distro I want on WSL. It's not in the store. What's the process? I think you addressed that, maybe reiterate that. What is the process to get a Linux distro in the store?
Yeah, so basically the process is first to reach out to the product team. On our documentation page, we have our partner's alias that you can email us through, and we can start walking you through the process. Aside from that, it's basically taking your user mode binaries, putting that into a container, and then you are able to submit that as a lightweight app into the store. And we walk you through the process of using the distro launcher, the GitHub repo that I pulled up earlier, and through that, you basically make some small modifications. That is essentially a template project that once you just basically change the name of your app and a couple IDs, you can submit as a full package to the store, and we go through the process of approving you. As long as you're a distro owner or maintainer, you can come into the store, and then your app kind of works like magic in the sense that the distro launcher will then go take the user mode, unpack it on the machine, and you can use it with WSL as you would any of the five applications you saw
before. And being able to do the exact same thing that you just mentioned, right?
Yeah.
Mount the drives and all the same integrated shell in VS Code and all of that stuff, right?
Exactly. And as a distro maintainer, you can actually select some of the features that you would like to have out of the box in there. So we have various flavors of Linux in the store right now, from Kali Linux, which is for security and penetration testing, to Ubuntu, which is, you know, your basic user web developer of Linux shell. So
that's great. Awesome. All right. Tony Henrique says, oh, this is great. I love these comments. I'm a Windows diehard fan. Then I installed Ubuntu WSL to make some tests, demonstrations. My colleagues were amazed. They did not know Windows could do this. I'm sure, Kevin, you're hearing a lot of this, right?
It was like, yeah, we know a lot of times that, you know, our Linux developers and the ecosystem there don't always pay attention to Windows. It's not always their first thought. And we're getting out there where little by little everybody's spreading the news about the fact that Windows is embracing Linux, especially the developer workflow. So it's not just running it in a container, it's about the entire workflow, making sure that it's seamless in each of these pieces of integrating in the file system, the user experience. We just want it to be a great thing. And so the more we can get evangelists out there telling people, I think more excited everybody will be, and then we'll be able to get more features in there because community can work with us to make those features better and better.
I've heard you say this before, and I think you continue to say it probably at Build Again, right? We want Windows to be the best dev box no matter what you're writing for
the
software.
It is absolutely our ambition. You know, I think I was asked a little originally, like, are you going to use that Windows subsystem to go run, you know, containers and everything? I'm like, I'm not even against any of that. But I don't want to lose sight that it's different to run it for a workload than it is to focus on making it a great developer experience.
Right.
And while we definitely want workload experiences there, I don't want to lose focus on making the seamless experience. So we've actually taken that as our highest priority, is to work through the developer, each of the stages of the development process, and make sure that those things are getting streamlined and listening to our community.
That's great. That's fantastic. Okay, Nicholas is asking, it would be more than nice if command.exe would stop screaming at me if I type ls instead of dir by accident. I've had this too, like when you're used to bash, right, and you kind of you transition back and forth, and even you did it in your demo too, right, Tara, where you went to the command prompt and stuff, and you're used to some of these commands. Are we thinking about aliasing some of these commands or making them a little bit friendlier?
I don't know that we've thought about specifically aliasing them all, but like I don't know if something we can consider.
Not quite aliasing, but you can actually run WSL from command prompt. So if you say WSL.exe Ubuntu, for example, or bash.exe, you have command prompt open and you're running WSL within that. So that allows some variability of interop and how you can use these two things together without actually going back and forth between your shell. We also have a couple different tools like WSL path that if you're going between these two systems, we change the slashes for you and make sure they're facing the right way. We also have a config file where you can go and manage your WSL distro. So let's say you have Ubuntu, SUSE, and Debian. You can go and make sure that you're working between those in a more seamless way. And so we plan on introducing more of these kinds of tools. It's, you know, once again, community feedback. It's great to hear from you what kinds of tools you're looking for, issues that you run into, so that we can incorporate that into what we're doing.
I think that's great. So we've actually mentioned community feedback a couple times. What is the best way to give community feedback on some of these things?
For specifically here, what's the best place?
Yeah, so there are a couple different things. If there's like a high-level feature that you're looking for that we don't have already, user voice is a great place to go. If it's a technical question, an issue that you're running into, we have a GitHub page, and we can link all of these
later.
Yeah,
we'll put these in the show notes.
Yeah, cool. And if there's just something you want to shout at us about, Twitter.
Shouting sometimes works, right? Yeah,
cool.
That's great. Super. All right, Nuno is asking, are there any plans to bring the use WSL, which was that config option in LaunchJSON that you had, right?
Yep.
Are there any plans to bring the use WSL for other languages, such as Go?
Great question, Nuno. He's one of our biggest WSL fans, so we have many conversations on Twitter. And so basically, the short answer is that from a perspective of how many things we have to get done, it's very difficult to go and add that for every single language. VS Code is completely open source. That's how we went in and created that partnership with them to go and add this for Node, which was our top ask. So we're looking to the community to help us add this for Go if it is something that, you know, people really want, and we get enough asks about it on User Voice, for example, then we can go and set our devs out onto adding Go and VS Code support. So it's all up to what you guys ask us for.
That's great. So Carl's asking, look, people are already trying this out, Tara. where are the Linux files? I just checked and I can't find them. So like when you're in your shell right there, is there, you know, can you show us where they are? Or is that something that, you know, we discourage, or, you know, why would somebody care, and can you actually find them?
Yeah, so basically they're in your app data folder. And we say that you shouldn't specifically go and start modifying files in your root folder, for example. So consider that this is a developer tool. You can do things that are on like admin privileges, as opposed to your regular like client machine. So you would be careful as you would with any other system.
So basically, we treat this like they really are applications.
Yeah.
And it's and that's where app data goes, and they're all kind of hard to find, obscure, so we can keep it updated, because we don't want people going and messing with it, and then if you try to update, it kind of messes up the core files. So we do that, ensure you can go find it, like just like you can find any app if you truly find it, if you truly want to. But we definitely say, hey, let us keep it updated, let's maintaining it, don't go modifying these things, because then obviously when there's some change, those things can break it.
So stupid question here. What we showed in that example was the WSL bash mounting my local C drive, working on my Node app that was on my Windows file system. Is the inverse something that would be interesting as well? So kind of like, you know, maybe somebody's not looking for the Linux kernel files type things, but what if I have, you know, like my app files in WSL? Does that even make sense? Is that even a valid question where I might have my user files, so to speak, in my Ubuntu instance, and that I would want to work with those there? Is that a use case for WSL? Or?
Yeah, that is definitely something that you can do. So let's say you have a project that you want to have all of your Linux libraries and all your favorite Linux open source tools in. You can create that project in your Linux file system through your WSL instance,
okay,
and go and work with it that way. So it really goes both ways. Like, we have the Windows to Linux side of things, and then we also have the Linux to Windows side. And we basically have called that like our interop between the two systems. And that's something that we're investing in pretty heavily.
Great. Awesome. OK, another question. Let's see. What Alan is asking, what are the benefits, if any, of using WSL to develop client-side web apps, or PWAs, with Angular, React, and Vue? Angular, React, and Vue being, of course, JavaScript frameworks. So what are the benefits, if any, of using WSL to develop those with any of these frameworks?
But I definitely think it's the integration that we've enabled to make it seamless on the box to work and interop between, you know, you can take and deploy back in development, you can test it against multiple browsers. But I don't think there's anything specific to those libraries. Really, it's about just your development environment. We just allow you to use the regular development environment you choose, and there's tons out there to choose from.
Okay, super. Jonas Anderson is asking, are you allowing programs like ConEmu to function better by not emulating ConHost?
So I believe the answer to that I'm getting from everybody else, since this is beyond what I completely know, the answer is yes.
Something we're working on.
And something we're working on? I don't specifically know the technical details of those pieces.
So Jonas, yes, something we're looking into, working on improving that experience there. So be on the lookout for that. All right, Cryptix is asking, when will I be able to control the install location for WSL in distros? My SSD is filling up quickly.
That is a great question. So this is something that we're working on. Essentially, right now, when you install WSL, just to give a little background, when you have a distro, you have to install it on your system drive, so usually your C drive. We're working on allowing you to be able to install this on a non-system drive, so if your SSD is filling up, maybe on a D drive, a USB, whatever it may be. So installing as well as moving between drives. So those are some things that we're looking at in the near term and hoping to iron out some details, because WSL is Linux-based, so there's some details that make this a little bit different than a regular app. So we have some work that we're working with the store team to get that done.
Great.
And just another piece there, in case anybody's asking about this, it's actually not easy to pick where you want apps to go today. And this will install, once we don't require the system drive, they'll go to the default app location. We're actually looking to improve that as well, where on a per app basis, you can choose where it goes. Today, you can set the default, and then you can move it. And it's kind of, everybody say that's kind of annoying for me, especially if I'm moving a file system or anything like that over. So we're going to look to improve the general app install. And then once we don't require the system drive, you'll get all of those benefits as well.
Super. That's great. All right, next question. Joe is asking, this is a good one. Why do we have WSL containers and VMs? How should I think about these tools that do a lot of the same things?
I don't know, you want to take that one? You want me to take that one? That's a loaded one. I was going to like Scott Guthrie take that one. He talks of build.
We do get that question quite a bit. I mean, it's a matter of a little bit of choice, giving you the choice of where you want to use these tools. So we kind of point you in the right direction and allow you to run wherever you may run. So for WSL, basically what you do is you get your very lightweight console-based environment, and you get your command line tools. A container is definitely more put together. It's something that you potentially want to spin up, spin down, and have a very specific set of things in, and you want it to be isolated. Then you have VMs, which allows you to have the full kernel, a GUI experience, and it's a little bit more heavyweight. So those are kind of the differences between the three. Why you would want to choose one or the other, really, it depends on the specific application that you have and your DevOps needs.
There are many choices, and every time we take, I also argue this, every time I take away, which one do you want me to get rid of? And the answer is none.
Yeah.
And sometimes we do have choices, and you have to make those trade-offs and think about it, but if you lost one, you'd realize you really needed it. You know, and one of the things we focus with WSL is really the seamless integration. We allow you to launch processes between each other. We really have tightened those together in a way that if you wanted isolation for launching and running a workload, you would not want that in most cases. And then there's protection with the other ones. And so I do think it's a lot, we will continue with WSL to kind of loosen the requirements so that it feels more seamless, while the other ones, I feel like sometimes all we do is tighten them for isolation and protection and for running your workloads.
Yeah, and I think you just said the workload term again, and it struck me as what you said earlier, and I definitely don't want to put words in your mouth, but WSL does seem to be, like you said, we're optimizing the WSL experience for the developer experience. Whereas some of these things like containers and VMs are really optimized for the opposite, for the workload experience, or among other things, but not necessarily
it's like running
for
local
the
cloud
dev productivity experience.
That you ultimately run in the cloud, you run a professional server, but you're running a local instance of it with your developer flow just to work out the kinks, but you need to know, but you want it efficient.
In fact, when you think about WSL and containers and VMs, you may be using a myriad of those all at one time, right? As a developer, right? WSL and the convenience for me to kind of work with my tools and libraries and things that I want, maybe do some testing, but eventually maybe I will move them to a containerized workload or my VM, maybe the VM even running in Hyper-V and stuff like that, right? Oh, that's great. All right, Nicholas Roms is asking the perf question. You always gotta have a perf question. Recent benchmarks between WSL and native Linux show very close speed. Big difference is with disk access. It's a lot slower on WSL. What are we doing to improve that? And secondarily, he's asking, how about supporting native Linux file system?
Yeah, this is a question that we get fairly often, considering that now WSL is maturing. We actually came out of beta in RS4, so putting a lot of investments there. And the main thing to note is that we're working on file system improvements and file system perf particularly. So this is a pretty large endeavor. It requires going into the Windows kernel level and making some pretty significant changes to the architecture. So you'll see improvements coming out in the next couple cycles, but it's going to take a while before you really see a vast file system improvement. And some of the things that we're working on in the near term are NPM. So going back to that node side of things, a lot of our developers use Node, so that's the first thing that we're going and approaching.
That's great. Always good to see performance improvements. I know it's like that's the feature that's never ending, right? It's always on the list, every release, what are we doing to always constantly improve? Yeah, so it's great. Okay, I'm gonna butcher this name. Fede is asking, if I installed WSL before it was available from the store, what's the best way to upgrade to the newest version without having two Ubuntus? Basically, what's the best way to remove the old one?
Yeah. I mean,
they're going to be side by side, right?
Yeah, uninstallation is probably your best route at this point.
Okay.
I think, you know, seeing that question, it's a good point of to what your upgrade story is. And considering the history of WSL, this isn't a scenario we've seen as often because there haven't been many opportunities to upgrade.
Yeah.
But
something
that's
the
best
way to
do it.
From beta to release.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we don't automatically upgrade you because we know that as your development environment, like, you have some specific things there. So we need you to go and do that manually because we don't want to break anyone's system.
Sure, sure. Great. Juiced is, he gets two questions today. Amazing. Do we already have a new name for the upcoming Windows 10 release, Kevin?
We have not announced the name for it. Okay. It is the next update for Windows 10.
That's a fantastic name right there. I think we should trademark it right now. So not yet, Juiced. I think when the update comes, I'm sure we'll see it, right? Lance is asking, can we expect the new SDK to SimShip, another hipster term, that means simultaneously ship, with the Windows 10 update, or will we get it a few days, or will we get it a few days before so we can ship our apps when they're ready?
So how about we take a step back and realize that Windows doesn't release on a day. We begin rollouts of Windows to our customers, and we do it basically validating it in a very responsible way. Knowing that
there's only
lots
like 10 users of Windows, right?
Yes, and we can only test so many devices. Like, so Windows becomes, I would say, there's a day we begin the rollout.
Yeah.
And then we ramp that up, and then users who want can go and get it. But we will begin that update. So it's not really like we launch and we ship on a day.
Right.
It
we
just
roll
begins
out
to the rollout.
Millions and millions
tens of millions
of
on that first round.
And so it's not like light switch and like everyone is there. You know, it's a phased approach. And actually seeing the telemetry that's coming in and making adjustments.
And so the SDK will be available. You know, roughly when we declare kind of done inside, and then you'll start to begin to see these rollouts and those who manually upgrade or choose to go do that. So they'll be very, very close, but it's not like we sit there and try to align days. We'll basically declare it done, declare the SDK done, and then begin rollouts. But the SDK is feature complete at this point. So there's nothing new you're going to see other than maybe getting some bug fixes that are inside of it.
So as a developer, your message would be what?
Start now.
Start now, okay.
Start now. We've shown, talked about how quickly we actually do these rings. By being careful on the ring rollout, we can find the issues, and then we just accelerate those rings very, very quickly and get to very high scale in only a few months. So these features will be out there for the majority of your users very, very quickly.
Well, that's great. Awesome. Juiced again, what features, this is a pretty good one, this is an option for you, Kevin, here. What features do you think developers will benefit the most from the next upcoming release?
So we talked a lot about this at Windows Developer Day. We have definitely some work we've done with MSIX, where developers now have a great new solution for deployment and containerization for their applications. We have Windows ML, probably one of my favorite features that just differentiates Windows. And as a new update of Windows rolls out, you will see us have over 700 million sockets for hardware-accelerated ML work that you can just go use and workload on Windows and all of these devices. We work whether you have the best graphics card in the world or none. You know, very low-end you have some, but you have very low-end graphics card and no hardware acceleration. We will use the local system as best as possible. So definitely, you know, I look at that containerization that we've done. I've looked at the Windows ML. And then we've also introduced something for our web developers where you can now get the Edge HTML control. That's the web view there with Edge. You know, use Edge content inside of any application, not just UWPs. You'll get it inside of WPF, WinForms, native Win32 applications. So if you're a web dev, you can start using the latest content in any of your applications.
That's awesome. And so we're looking forward to that coming soon.
Right. Those things are all coming soon. You can try them and test them all out. It's all available now.
Great. All right. I think you got time for one more question here.
Yep.
All right. Zach Williamson, are there any plans to bring GUI components to WSL? In other words, native X11?
Yeah. So the short answer here is no, there are not plans. And as we mentioned before, the difference between WSL, containers, and virtualization, that we really point you towards Hyper-V and those tools if you want to have GUI more full-fledged experience. So right now, the plan is WSL stays as a command line tool.
Great, awesome.
We've seen people try. It's just not something we see as the highest priority.
Again, optimizing kind of for the dev experience and the workflow.
Versus an end user, hey, I want to change my shell out. Seems much more end user than it would be the developer workflow.
Right. Well, Tara, Kevin, it's been great having you again today on another community stand-up. Any parting words you want to say to Windows developers out there?
I'm just looking forward to telling you more about what's coming after the next Windows update, to the Windows update after that, and the future that we're bringing, you know, to all the excitement that we're bringing to Windows at Build coming May 7th through 9th. So either try to attend. If not, watch us online.
That's great. Yeah. Love to see you all at Build as well. Channel 9 will be there. We'll actually going to have a another Windows Live component to Build there. So be sure to register for Build, both ideally in person and join us here in Seattle, and talk to Kevin and his team if you're a Windows developer and want to give direct feedback. And we're excited to see you all there and also watch online. So thank you again for joining us today.
Thanks for having
us. Excited to hear always about the Windows updates. And we'll see you soon, everybody. Thanks for joining us on Channel 9 Live for this latest edition of the Windows Community Stand-Up. Thanks again. We'll see you soon.
Thanks.